This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 223 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. So I'm in an AAF fantasy league because I'm addicted to fantasy football. For those of you who have no idea what that even means, the AAF is the Alliance of American Football, and it's a professional football league that started this year. Clearly, you don't have the typical superstar names in this league. Aaron Rodgers isn't playing in the AAF. Trent Richardson is, though. There are some ex-NFLers and players who are great in college who are playing in the league, but I most definitely don't know the players in this league like I do with the NFL. But like I said, I'm in this AAF fantasy league and I'm doing it with seven other fantasy analysts. And let me tell you guys, my team is complete trash. My first round pick has scored like a combined six PPR points through 3 weeks. This is going to sound like a complete humble brag, but I don't remember the last time finishing last in a fantasy league, and that's bound to happen in this one. I'm an AAF fraud. The AAF has actually gotten a decent fan following, and it's not doing as poorly as other professional leagues have done. I even have an Orlando Apollos t-shirt that my wife got me for my birthday. And I think part of the reason we're seeing a subset of people enjoying it is because they didn't market the league as a competitor to the NFL. I mean, the league started right after the NFL ended. They were very aware that it wasn't going to compete with the National Football League. I bring this all up because I got a mailbag question from at a whiny millennial this week that said, "In your opinion, is the AAF overhyped? Should they tone it down a few notches? Are fans exaggerating the quality of play?" And to answer that question directly, no, I don't think that it's overhyped at all. I think it's filling a niche that's needed to be filled. The quality of play isn't unbelievable, but it's also not that bad. It's competent. And during February, when there's no more football and we're still in the regular season for basketball and hockey, it gives people another sports outlet. I like the AAF. I think it's a cool league. I suck ass at AAF fantasy football, but I like it. And I hope it's able to stick around because it would be awesome to have a former minor league system for the NFL. So that's my take that no one really cares about with the AAF. Before we get going to the rest of the questions, I wanted to let you guys know about a new addition to the NumberFire Podcast Network. We've got a brand new podcast that's part of our NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed called The Daily ISO, and it's with DFS analyst Tom Vecchio. It's published every Monday through Friday and breaks down that night's NBA slate of games position by position. It'll absolutely help you become a better NBA DFS player. So go on Spotify or iTunes or wherever you download your podcasts, search for the NumberFire Daily Fantasy Podcast, and subscribe to get that show each day. You'll also then be subscribed to get the Heat Check from Jim Sonnis and Brandon Gadula, and during baseball season, you'll get Jim Sonnis' Solo Shot Podcast for MLB DFS. If you're a DFS player, you don't want to miss those shows. This question is from at ChanWag3. Where would DJ Moore have ranked for you in this year's wide receiver class, and why? So if you follow this podcast or my takes last year on the draft, you might remember that DJ Moore was my wide receiver one, and he was my wide receiver one by far. I'm not sure people understand how complete his production profile was. I did the study of comparing successful NFL wide receivers to the current college class last season, so the podcast that I dropped on Tuesday, I did that same study for last year's class, and DJ Moore dominated. The sample of stud NFL wide receivers included 31 players in last year's study. So I was comparing those 31 players and their final season production profiles to the 2018 class. Among the 31 players, DJ Moore's final season college reception share would have ranked third, his receiving yard share would have ranked third, and his touchdown share fourth. That's in comparison to how those successful wide receivers performed during their last college season. And then all the while, DJ Moore had a breakout age that was elite. DJ Moore was an incredible prospect. And in my eyes, he was also a safe prospect. And maybe this take is going to be controversial, I have no idea, but I would have had DJ Moore as the top wide receiver in this year's class. This year's class is really interesting because I don't see any obvious prospect who's got a high chance of being elite. N'Keal Harry has the most complete profile, but he has athleticism and separation concerns. DK Metcalf might have the highest ceiling, but he's got concerns that I talked through on the episode earlier this week. I think the wide receiver class is really, really solid. There are a lot of players who should be contributors at the very least, and I'm sure that some of them will hit and become really good, but identifying that player right now isn't so easy to do when there are legitimate red flags for a lot of these guys. That's why DJ Moore would be the wide receiver one for this year's class. He would have had a better production profile than anyone else in the class, but he was also a little bit safer compared to these guys. He had a lot of versatility that he could bring to the next level. This next question is from at @Nick_8686. Which second-year wide receiver do you think will take the biggest jump, and why? I don't think there's a clear answer to this. DJ Moore already started to produce down the stretch last year, and there are question marks around Cam Newton's health. Plus, saying DJ Moore is a boring answer. A lot of people would probably answer with Christian Kirk here, given the new offense and the fact that it's almost impossible for the Cardinals to be worse on offense this season. And I think that Kirk is a pretty safe answer. Maybe he's the right answer. But Larry Fitzgerald's still there. We don't know what type of passer Josh Rosen is. And we may see flat target distribution in Arizona. So volume could be somewhat of a concern. But like I said, Kirk probably is the answer here. But I think there are a couple of other interesting candidates. One of them being James Washington if and when Antonio Brown gets traded. I'd expect the Steelers and then draft a wide receiver, but there's no telling if that wideout will contribute in year one. Washington was someone that I was into last season coming out, and he didn't have a great rookie year, but given the question is about taking the biggest jump, he's absolutely a candidate. He's going to go from not a ton of production to potentially being the number two option in Pittsburgh's offense. And then my low-key pick to make the biggest jump would be one of the Green Bay wide receivers. I talked about them on my Players to Buy podcast about a month ago, but with Marquez Valdes-Scantling and maybe even Equanimeous St. Brown, you're getting two players who could see the field a lot next year, and they're in an Aaron Rodgers-led offense. Free agency in the draft can change that, of course, but as of today, they're interesting year two candidates to make the jump, especially now that Randall Cobb is unlikely to re-sign with the Packers. This next question is from @ChrisConant4. Who would you rather keep, Kamara or Mahomes? Both should cost around 40% of auction budget in a half PPR league. I'm getting a lot of keeper questions right now, and I just want to say, if you can wait to make your keeper decisions, do it. You want as much information as possible when making those selections. And if you want to run through a process of who to keep, episode 141 has that. I did a keeper selection show last offseason that should help with these questions. This one in particular is easy to answer, though. When two players have the exact same keeper cost, you just choose the player who's more valuable in fantasy football straight up. And that's easily Alvin Kamara. He not only plays a position that's more important, but he's going to have a much higher ADP than Patrick Mahomes. But give episode 141 a listen if you've got a keeper question. This next question is an email from Steven. And remember, you can email me these questions at jj@numberfire.com. It says, I was looking over a few 2019 running back rankings, and at least at this point, there are about 30 guys I would be comfortable as relying on as a starting running back. Is this right? Is running back deep now? This isn't all that uncommon of a thought when we're in February and early March. I do think running back is deeper than it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago, but things can change so easily at that position. We've still got free agency and the draft to go. The free agent class could bring forth a few more starters, and even though this running back class is kind of weak, we'll get some players who emerge to steal touches from players that we think are established. We may feel good about some of those third and fourth round running backs right now, but the elite players at the running back position are still going to be the ones who are giving you the biggest edge in fantasy football, because that's how it's pretty much been every single season. And for the record, I'm not sure I see it as deep as 30. Once you get to like RB15, you get to players who are in more split backfields, or players who you can't project to be workhorses, like Tariq Cohen, Aaron Jones, Darius Geis, Sony Michel, even Kerryon Johnson. They're all players who should be really solid at their positions, but you can't lock them into a three-down back role who's also seeing goal line work. Others in their backfields are going to be involved. So maybe this comes down to how you're defining being comfortable. If you're looking for RB2 types, yeah, there's lots of RB2 types right now, but higher-end RB1s are still very, very scarce. This next question is from @WhatTheChain. Looks like Cincy wants to trade John Ross. Is there a team that can unlock Ross? I'm sure there are teams out there who will value John Ross more than the Bengals currently do. Now, I think Ross as a player is a bit misunderstood, to be honest. Everyone thinks that he's just a speedster who can stretch the field, but he had a really strong college dominator rating and a really good breakout age. He scored 17 freaking touchdowns during his final college season. So I'm not giving up on John Ross just yet. I don't think he's going to be a stud, but the right landing spot, as you said, could unlock him. And it wouldn't shock me at all if that team to unlock him is the New England Patriots. This next question is from @TimeToPivot. Is Superflex killing traditional fantasy football? This reads like an old man saying that video games are ruining children's lives. No, Superflex isn't killing traditional fantasy football at all. The game of fantasy football has evolved and it has to evolve. We should embrace ways to make all positions of equal importance. I'll never understand why it would be more fun for people to just draft running backs and wide receivers and just a few tight ends for the first 10 rounds of their draft when you can get quarterback picks into the mix as well. Why wouldn't you want that? That's what makes Superflex formats awesome. Fantasy football has changed dramatically since it started. Back in the day, people used to just play in touchdown-only leagues. And even though those can still be fun, I'll never understand why people don't want to be challenged and make the game more complex. I think Superflex League should be the norm given today's landscape. This last question is from @BDARFFB. Is there any statistical data that suggests how a defense can best defend against elite pass-catching running backs like McCaffrey and Kamara? They seem uncoverable out of the backfield. I think we overstate the impact pass-catching running backs are actually having on a football field. Like, let's look at Christian McCaffrey and Alvin Kamara and what they did in 2018. There were 21 running backs who saw 50 or more targets last year, and of those 21, Tariq Cohen had the highest yards per target rate at 7.97. Christian McCaffrey's was a hair under 7, and Alvin Kamara's was at 6.75. If you had a yards per target rate that low at any other position, you'd be considered bad. For instance, only 20% of the 50-plus target wide receivers last year had a yards per target rate under 7. What that means is that targeting most higher volume wide receivers would lead to more yards than targeting Christian McCaffrey or Alvin Kamara. Now you may be saying, but they also have higher average depth of targets. And you're right, they do. But that's also the point. It's less effective per target to throw the ball and utilize running backs the way that teams are utilizing running backs. Now, to be clear, this doesn't mean that I think the team should never throw to the running back. There are times where you don't need to throw the ball down the field. And there are teams who can't do it all that well given their personnel. And there's also success rate that we can look at that factors in the impact that these targets are having. Even if a player is gaining fewer yards, he can still be providing a successful play based on an expected points formula. If a play increases a team's expected points from one play to the next, it's successful. If not, it's a failure. You can measure success rate on a per reception or a per target level. So you're looking at successes divided by receptions or successes divided by targets. I like looking at per target data because it tells us how successful plays are when a particular player is targeted. And last season, Christian McCaffrey ranked 15th in the NFL in success rate on targets among all 50 plus target players. So that's across running back, wide receiver, and tight end. And there were 125 of those players. The thing is, though, running backs just don't rank very high on this list. McCaffrey was 15th, then Jalen Richard was the second best running back in success rate on targets, ranking 35th. Alvin Kamara ranked 61st out of the 125 players. A random target to Chris Herndon last season provided a higher success rate than one to Alvin Kamara. So to answer this original question, they may be uncoverable in terms of overall catch rate, but we have to look at the impact they're making on the field when they catch the football. The true impact. It's not bad by any means. Christian McCaffrey was very valuable as a receiver last year. I mean, this is why CMC was my favorite running back coming out of his draft class by far. But we do need to see that consistently happen, which we usually don't at running back. But through the air is absolutely where running backs can separate themselves as valuable on a football field in today's game. That's going to do it for today's show. Thanks to all of you guys for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And if you're on iTunes, please leave me a rating and review. It goes a long way to helping this show. I'm also on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. I'll be tweeting about the Combine this weekend, and I'll be doing a show next week that goes over some of those results for running backs and wide receivers. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you then.